epilepsy is an electrical problem in the brain. The unpredictability of seizures is devastating, both for those who have them and for those looking on. Have you ever seen somebody have a convulsive epileptic fit?
No, I haven't. I'm very happy that I haven't because it looks terrifying. My little sisters and my dad saw me have the first and the second one, and my mum also saw the second one, which was good because she's an emergency nurse. I think that's also why my family looks after me so carefully, because it was just so frightening. It's far more frightening for people watching than for the epileptic to see the fit.
And university student Georgia recalls her own experience of having epileptic seizures.
I had two tonic-clonic seizures, so they're the really big ones where you shake and you fit. They're really frightening. It's actually, you don't know what's going on when you have one. It's more like you're unconscious. But afterwards you feel really sick. You feel like you want to vomit. I kept going back to sleep. You're pretty totally unreactive, so you can't talk. You feel like you've been hit by a truck, basically.
Georgia. It's All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynn Malcolm. Today, how epilepsy affects people's lives and some of the promising new approaches being developed to manage the condition, especially in the area of seizure forecasting. Dr. Mark Cook is researcher and head of the Melbourne Medical School and the Department of Neurology at St. Vincent's Hospital.
The brain can be thought of as a very large circuit board, and the wires on the surface of the brain can be interfered with in many different ways, and ways that we're very familiar with, for instance, are injuries and tumours and malformations. Anything that disrupts the wiring can cause short circuits, which are essentially what the seizures are. Now, there are other ways that you could produce these short circuits by altering the way the wires themselves work, and you can look at a parallel to that being genetic abnormalities. So on the one hand, you have structural problems which upset the wiring, and on the other hand, you have disturbances of the way the wires function, and either can result in short circuits. And these very highly synchronized discharges of electrical activity affecting areas of the brain which might start in one area and spread, or alternatively start in very wide regions of brain simultaneously, are actually what produce the events that we recognize as seizures.
Mark Cook. Georgia is a fourth-year arts science student at Monash University. She's studying hard to get into medicine at the end of the year. She loves to run and plays lots of sport.
So I had a seizure at the end of year 11, and it was just passed as a one-off sort of thing, so we sort of ignored it. And then I had two more at the end of year 12, so just before my final year 12 exam, because I was so exhausted, I was so sleep-deprived. Just before my exams, I was really run down, exhausted, and everyone thinks that that's pretty normal for a year 12 student. But one night I went to the movies, actually, and I left and I walked out and I had no idea where I was. And I didn't know I wouldn't have been able to get home if I'd been by myself. And it was very frightening. So that was probably the first indication that there was actually something going on. And about 4 weeks later, I had two more seizures. So that was my indication that I was actually an epileptic.
And what were these seizures like? What did it feel like to you?
So I had two tonic-clonic seizures, so they're the really big ones where you shake and you fit. They're really frightening. So it's actually, you don't know what's going on when you have one. It's more like you're unconscious. But afterwards you feel really sick. You feel like you want to vomit. I kept going back to sleep, and you're pretty totally unreactive, so you can't talk. You feel like you've been hit by a truck, basically.
You had several of those. Then what happened? How were you treated?
I spent a couple of days in hospital because I was so sick. And then after that, I went and saw Professor Cook. I went and saw him. He's my neurologist. After that, I found out that I had partial epilepsy. So that's when you have very small absent seizures. So you just sort of zone out. So I can't hear what's going on around me when I have a seizure like that. So my eyes stay open, I stay standing up. But then when you get really sleep deprived, that's when you fall to the ground and have the classic example of a fit. So I'm really lucky I haven't had one of those since. And the partial seizures have obviously declined because I'm medicated and I'm seeing a neurologist now and it's all being treated. But yeah, you just sort of have to manage it very, very well.
Georgia. Epilepsy is the most common serious neurological disorder after stroke. Dr. Mark Cook says that this often comes as a surprise to people because no one talks about epilepsy due to the stigma around it. So how well treated is it?
Unfortunately, although we've made tremendous inroads into the treatment of epilepsy with new medications and advances in surgical treatment, there's still a lot of people who aren't adequately controlled. So 1% of the population has chronic epilepsy. About 5% of the population will have seizures during their life. And of that 1% who have chronic seizures, about 1/3 aren't controlled with the medications that we have. As well, many of those who are controlled are affected by bad side effects from the medications that we do have. So many will tell you that their medications work, but they hate taking them.
What are some of the side effects that affect people's lives?
Well, all of these medications work on the electrical activity of the brain. And so you can imagine that a common side effect is that it slows down people's thoughts or affects their memory a little, takes the edge off them, if you like. And so they don't feel as sharp as they did before. Now, it's different for everyone, and generally you can find a medication that suits people without causing side effects. But nevertheless, many people suffer the neurological side effects. The drugs might affect the body in other ways too, so that they might have effects on the liver or blood or other body systems. Something that's become very important in recent years is the effect the medications might have on the bones, for instance. So there's lots of other consequences of taking the medications in the way that we do.
And what about surgery? How often is surgery needed and how effective is surgery?
Surgery can be extremely effective if you can find the cause of seizures. And so generally we offer surgery to people where we can identify, ideally on a scan, we can identify where the seizures come from or where they're likely to come from. And then we try and confirm that with various other tests, such as the electrical tests and PET scans and other sophisticated imaging tests. If we can identify a small region that we can get at safely and remove it completely, then the results of surgery are excellent. Unfortunately, a lot of people have causes of their seizures which aren't so easy to pinpoint, or in an area of brain which is dangerous or risky to get at, or it's just too big for us to completely remove. Those situations turn out to be unfortunately common. So the early expectations that with the dramatic advances in MRI imaging over the last 25 years, the expectations were that we'd be able to offer surgery to an enormous range of people. And we do offer it to a lot more people than we could, but the downside has been that it's turned out that many are too extensive or complex for us to easily address with surgery.
Mark Cook has been George's neurologist since she first had seizures. How did that make you feel that you didn't know whether or when you might have another seizure?
It's incredibly, incredibly frightening. So I finished year 12. I was looking forward to spending summer holidays with a bit of freedom. And you go from being I was a very independent adult and I couldn't go anywhere without my mum and dad. My mattress had to be pulled down. I was sleeping on the floor of my bedroom because for my second seizure, I actually rolled out of bed and hit my head very hard. My mum would often come in and sleep in my bedroom just to make sure that I was okay through the night. I wasn't able to go running by myself. I couldn't swim by myself. Even having a shower, I had to be sort of monitored just to make sure that I was okay in the bathroom so that I didn't slip and hit my head again. So you go from being very independent to having a lot of invasion of privacy, and it's obviously you need it, but it's a big change. It's a big lifestyle change. And then when you move into university, it can be very frightening because it's, you know, nerve-wracking anyway, starting uni. You don't know anyone, but you go, oh my goodness, I could have a seizure and just drop to the floor in front of 1,000 people and nobody's going to know me and know what to do.
Georgia. Treating people with epilepsy has some significant challenges. Dr. Mark Cook.
It's a difficult condition to treat because the seizures aren't occurring all of the time. So most adults with epilepsy are having seizures, maybe with bad epilepsy, and maybe having seizures a few times a week or a few times a month, or perhaps even less often than that. And that might sound much, because the seizures might consist simply of losing awareness for a few minutes. It's often difficult for people to appreciate how that disrupts people's lives, but it does, because the unpredictability of the events and the fact that they might not be safe operating, say, a car or machinery, or it might make their work environment dangerous, all of these issues are very real, and it's the unpredictability of the situation which leads to a lot of that disability. Most patients with epilepsy are extremely well in all other respects, and to have their life limited by such a random or seemingly random and unpredictable occurrence is devastating. And it has ramifications for a lot of other aspects of their life, so that, for instance, apart from driving and work, it might affect their recreational activities. Swimming might not be safe. Other sports they're involved with might not be safe. And it will have social consequences. So other people, chiefly through the very low level of understanding in the community generally, might cause them to have different relations with their friends or their employers, who might consider epilepsies a psychiatric illness or perhaps even a contagious illness. So there's lots of misunderstandings of this kind which affect people terribly. Epilepsy requires close management of lifestyle, so that a very important trigger of seizures is sleep deprivation, and other important ones are stress. Compliance with the medication, that is, taking them regularly and reliably, are really, really important. And these involve changes to people's lives which are way beyond most other medical conditions.
So tell me about the main improvements on the horizon in better treatment of epilepsy.
There's a few big areas, and one is it's not having such an impact on treatment at the moment, but it will, and that is the better understanding of the genetic causes of epilepsy. So many epilepsies have a genetic basis, and these are being much better understood. And you've seen in other conditions, particularly cancer, where once the genes are identified, it allows development of specific treatments, perhaps. And so in the years ahead, we will see new treatments evolve because of that, and that will be very important. From the point of view of the other epilepsies, we're getting much better with medications, so newer medications tend to have better side effect profiles overall, and that's obviously very important. And being able to have a bigger range of medications to select from gives you a much better opportunity to fine-tune a medication to the individual patient. So that's really important too. The surgery is improving because imaging techniques are always getting better, more powerful scanners, new systems and ways of finding out exactly where in the brain seizures come from. And for instance, we've been involved in a lot of this work with Swinburne University recently, using their MEG scanner, so a magnetoencephalogram, which lets us see activity of the brain in ways that we couldn't before. And of course, as well, we've been looking at some very novel ways of improving seizure management, so that seizure prediction is an important one. We've been doing work over some years now in seizure prediction, which has been quite successful, though it's still not a mainstream therapy, but that will change over the next few years. So we performed a study which we completed about 5 years ago, where we put devices into people. So they were implanted devices with electrodes sitting directly on brain, where we recorded continuously the brain's electrical activity, and we used this activity to predict seizures, and we demonstrated that it could work. It worked really well for some people, worked pretty well for a lot of others. There were some patients that we couldn't predict seizures accurately for, though, or even generate a system to make the predictions useful. So we've been working with all of the data, and we generated an enormous amount of data from that study that we're still working with very actively. There are new methods of delivering drugs directly to the brain, and we've been doing that with a pump. These are studies still in very early days, but they're showing great promise. So I think for people with epilepsy, there's an enormous range of new things happening. Of course, a lot of this is experimental still, but it is proving very successful.
Mark Cook, neurologist and head of the Melbourne Medical School. You're with All in the Mind on RN. I'm Lynn Malcolm. One of the most devastating things about having epilepsy is that you never really know for sure when you might have a seizure. And depending on when and where it happens to you, it can be a matter of life or death. Mark Cook mentioned the new research area of seizure prediction. He and his colleagues from Melbourne University have been working with IBM, providing them with their patients' brain activity data to develop seizure prediction technology. Dr. Stefan Hara is part of the IBM Research Australia team, which is developing artificial intelligence technology for seizure forecasting.
I'm a little bit of a jack of all trades. I like to find ways to bridge disciplines with each other. And coming from computer science and engineering, I do have a background in data science. Now, one of the hottest things to be in right now is in artificial intelligence, because that allows to tackle problems which haven't been solved for decades in completely new ways. And epilepsy came up because it just ticks all the boxes in terms of the use case that you want to have to bring AI to full fruition. The field of epilepsy is a field where a data-driven approach has not exactly been the focus for what's been done over the past. And so that has led to a situation where treating, diagnosing, and managing epilepsy has largely been a trial and error endeavor. And that's something that I believe can be changed by looking at epilepsy in a more coherent, data-driven way. I think that's one of the most rewarding things one can do, to merge skills and advances in two different fields into a project and solve something there that neither one of the disciplines could have been solving by themselves. What we have set ourselves as a mission statement is we want to develop technology that reinstates a certain level of control in these patients who have to live with epilepsy. And the way we do this is that we develop technology that can predict seizures before they happen. And the technology that we are developing here is not just something we run on a supercomputer in the basement, but with the research that we are doing, we have actually found a way to build such a prediction system that runs on a chip that is the size of a postage stamp and runs on the power budget of a hearing aid. Such a system will allow patients to gain back control over a certain part of their lives. Imagine if you're driving your car, or if you're rock climbing, if you're socializing, right? If you know a seizure will strike, you can manage the situation, and that can make the difference between life or death if you want to look at it really closely, right? Pulling your car over before a seizure strikes can make all the difference.
Stefan Hara explains why AI technology has such good potential in the management of a condition like epilepsy.
Epilepsy is a highly individualized condition, so it changes. Epilepsy looks different in different patients, and it looks different in a patient over time. That's what makes it so hard to find a coherent way to tackle it. And what you need is essentially technology that automatically learns to recognize conditions for a patient and also continuously adapts to that patient over time. That technology has just not been out there. And with the advance of machine learning and specifically deep learning, we all of a sudden do have an analytics technology that allows us to tackle these problems.
So you mentioned deep learning. Just explain to me what you mean by deep learning and what role that has in this breakthrough.
Right. Deep learning is a type of machine learning that allows to find patterns in big, noisy, unstructured data automatically. Meaning these are algorithms that can learn to recognize specific objects, specific patterns, signal features automatically as we present the algorithms with the data. The power comes really into it by this self-adaption capability. These algorithms, the more data you present them with, become smarter and smarter in recognizing the patterns of interest. And they do this fully automatically, which is different to what classic AI or machine learning does, where a human intervention is needed to educate the algorithm every time about a specific feature of interest that you need to manually define. Deep learning doesn't need that. Deep learning just needs the data, and it then trains on the data and finds these patterns automatically. By bringing AI and specifically deep learning to the field of epilepsy, we can bring precision medicine to epilepsy. And that's what's majorly been missing to advance the field of treatment and diagnosis and management of epilepsy.
Stefan Hara from IBM Research Australia. An aura is the term that some people use to describe a feeling they get before a seizure. It can serve as a warning that a seizure is about to happen. Here's George's experience of an aura.
So I have for one of them. It's very, very difficult to explain because it's a feeling. It's like walking out onto a stage and you don't know anything about what you're doing or why you're there, and there's thousands of people watching you, and you just feel really sick in your stomach, you feel really nervous, and you know that something's wrong, you know that something is going to happen. So that's the aura I get, but it's very hard to describe and it's hard to analyse. And the worst thing is that when you get a similar feeling, or you feel maybe a bit stressed or you have a headache, you might interpret that as an aura, but then nothing happens. So you makes you more on edge and you become very, very sensitive to any change that's a little bit abnormal with your body.
Some people with epilepsy have some way of predicting when they're going to get a seizure, and it's often referred to as an aura. Is this a similar sort of thing that the AI is tapping into?
Very good. So that's a very good question. Yes, so the aura is an interesting aspect. Not all patients have that sensation. Some do. And that is a very good example for how a signal that announces a seizure can be detected by a human brain. So most of these patients have a hard time describing exactly what manifests the aura, what is it, but they feel something there. There's something there. And so, as we say in the data science and AI field, if a human can detect, can notify something, an AI algorithm will be able to do that as well. And that's where AI is so powerful, because even though you can't give the algorithm exact instructions, such as this is exactly the signal you're looking for now, but where you actually move from learning by instruction to learning by example, such as here is what manifests an aura, this is what I feel, this is what it is, we can actually have these algorithms pick up on these aura signals or aura-like signals automatically without even knowing what exactly they are and what causes them. And so in that sense, what you describe with the aura is a way where the human brain has taken over the role of our artificial intelligence system that can pick up on these auras even if a human brain couldn't.
The ultimate goal for Stefan Hara and his colleagues is to create a wearable device to allow people to know when they're about to have a seizure.
In our study, we have simulated how the system that we developed would work on a patient cohort of 10 patients. And what we found is that the prediction horizon, as we call the alert time, if you will, that is vastly differing from patient to patient. It ranges from a few minutes to a few hours. And we suspect that there is a neuroscientific reason for that. The algorithm itself purely finds the patterns. It doesn't give you an explanation on why it found it at that point in time in one patient and at a different point in time in another patient. What's important to say, though, is that for all patients that we ran this study on, we could predict seizures ahead of time. And again, even if it's just a few minutes, it allows you technically to administer medication, it allows you to pull your car over or to find a quiet space. If it's a few hours, you can even plan an entire afternoon based on that. So you have different levels of planning capability here, but every patient did have that prediction capability, and from a couple minutes to a couple hours ahead, they would know before a seizure strikes.
Stefan Hara from IBM points out that the technology they've developed is an important proof of concept and represents a real breakthrough. But further research is required, and it may be a few more years before it will be clinically available to patients. Georgia is grateful that medication is now working for her epilepsy.
Yes, I am. I'm very, very lucky. I'm very grateful that Professor Cook has put me on a medication that actually works for absence seizures, because I was originally on just a generalized medication, and that would have eventually not worked for the type of seizures that I have.
And do you have any side effects from the medication you're on?
Yes, epilepsy medication has lots of side effects. Probably the biggest one is you get very tired, but that's probably the worst thing, but it's worth it.
So what do you think about this possibility of developing an AI technology which would be wearable and which would help people predict whether they're going to get a seizure?
Oh, it's just incredible. I mean, the freedom that it would provide, so that I would know that I'd be able to run safely by myself, go driving, just be out and about and not have to stress and be worried. It would be absolutely incredible to know that something else was looking after me as well. I wasn't just looking after myself. And also to be able to look into some sort of graph or seizure indication and go, yep, you know, today I'm okay, or for the next few hours I'm okay, but, you know, later tonight I won't be. That would be just amazing. It would be life-changing, I think. I think it's fantastic that someone like me gets a chance to talk about it, because I think it frightens a lot of people, I think. I think people think that I can just sort of drop to the floor at any time, and my epilepsy is a lot more controlled than that, so I'm lucky. But, you know, it frightens me as well as other people. So it's like any medical condition. The more you talk about it and the more you're open about it, the better it is, because realistically there's no point being anxious about something that you can't change. And so the more you can talk about it, the better.
And so what are your future aspirations?
Oh, so study medicine. I mean, neurology would obviously be fantastic. I've got a fantastic neurologist to look up to. Or in emergency medicine, because I've had some amazing emergency doctors look after me. But somewhere in the medical field, so I can do some research, but work with people. And the whole field just attracts me, because you can do so much wonderful work.
Georgia. And many thanks to her for sharing her personal experience.
A lot of the problems that people with epilepsy suffer are related to other people's misunderstanding of the condition, and that remains a terrible burden for people. I meet patients every week who tell me that they lost their job simply through revealing their condition. The other thing I'd like to say, though, is that I've mentioned a lot of experimental work, and the sort of processes that are involved in this are very tough for patients, and it takes great commitments for patients to undertake these sorts of studies and be involved in the way they are, and it's very moving how people commit themselves to the development of new advances really just to help others. I'd just like to give them credit for that.
Dr. Mark Cook, head of the Melbourne Medical School and of the Department of Neurology at St. Vincent's Hospital. Thanks to producer Diane Dean and sound engineer Wayne Nguyen. I'm Lynne Malcolm. It's been great to have your company. Catch you next time.